So why are agencies so interesting to you as a business?
Yeah, great question. So agencies are interesting because on average, agencies will do 20 to 30% net if you're a great agency.
Okay.
That is cash in the bank every single month, pretty consistent, some high months, some low months, but very consistent. If you take a look at that from an asset perspective, that's an amazing asset. Now, the exit multiples aren't very high because there's a lot of founder risk in most agencies until you get to multiple millions of dollars a year in EBITDA. But if you compare that to, example, like an e-commerce brand, we've invested in a handful of e-commerce brands over the past couple of years, and we're waiting 3, 5, 7, however long it takes to make a multiple of return on that asset. We're not really generating cash. You acquire an agency asset, you're generating cash on the way up. You can use that cash to invest in other assets, right? Or to fund your lifestyle, do whatever you want. So from my perspective, I think that agencies are kind of the undervalued assets that most people should look to purchase, but they're kind of blindsided by the shiny objects of like SaaS, like in, you know, 10 times revenue multiples, or e-commerce, and you know, scaling very quickly.
Welcome everybody to the Out of Home Insider Show, a podcast like no other, hosted by the one and only Tim Rowe. Get ready to have some knowledge dropped on you and to be entertained, because nothing's more valuable than food for your brain. So sit back, relax, we're about to dive in as the best industry podcast is about to begin.
In the lead up, we were talking about how you one day quit your dream job of selling insurance and working for the man to start a lead gen agency. Maybe take us back in time. Take us back to Kyle Hunt working said dream job and making that leap that we've heard from so many other founders, that big leap into the thing I really, really want to do. Maybe start us there.
Yeah. So I wouldn't say that working for the insurance company was my dream job, but I would say like what I did at the insurance company was my dream job. Because I graduated from college in 2009. And then I worked for Aetna, which is a huge, you know, Fortune 100 health insurance company. And I was actually in a program for sales at UCF, University of Central Florida, and had this job. And the first thing that my manager told me when I was hired, he's like, here's the Amex Platinum. Like, go spend as much as you can on these brokers and make them like you so that we can sell these products. So that was the dream job part of it, because I had an unlimited budget
to
have fun right out of college.
As a recent college grad, here's the Amex. Go crazy.
Yeah, yeah. And I'd worked very hard up to that point in school. I was like valedictorian in high school. I was always studying, always working incredibly hard. So it felt very good to have, you know, some success right out of college. Back in 2008, 2009, which was like the financial crisis, if you remember.
So hard to even get a job, sure.
It was incredibly difficult. And I interviewed at so many places to make sure that I had a job and that my mom wouldn't yell at me for being poor when I left.
Moms are a good motivation like that. So you're at Aetna, you're racking up this Amex bill, just having a great time. Really, I mean, yes, it's Aetna and it's insurance. Aetna's awesome. But that's a pretty cool job for like right out of college. I think that is every college kid's dream, is to like be out there wining and dining clients and on a really on a path for a great career, right? As a part of a great company on the trajectory. But something said, Kyle, you're meant for more. You're meant for something else. And you left to start a lead gen agency.
Yeah, there's agents there that are making $500,000, $750,000 a year. So there's a huge income potential in insurance. It's kind of one of those industries that doesn't really, like, you know, the companies make that much, but you don't know how much the people make. And the salespeople make a lot of money. But it's one thing to like make good money. It's also another thing to realize you're literally working for the man, right? Mm-hmm. Like working for a really big insurance company is like, you're literally working for the man. And I always has kind of like an entrepreneurial streak, and, you know, working for someone else for 5 years. And, I remember there was this one moment where I was sitting in my car in the garage. It's like 8:30. I was ready to go into work, and I'm just like hitting my head in the steering wheel. I'm like, why am I doing this? Oh, I'm like, I'm making so much money for these guys. I should be doing this on my own and starting something else. So that's what I did.
And what was that first foray into marketing? What was the first kind of endeavor?
Yeah. So I had a friend who owned a finance company in lead gen, and he wanted to mentor me. So I came on board his company, and we started a separate company, and we did lead gen. We ended up building out like a call center component to that too.
Oh, wow.
Had about 25 employees at one point, and then exited that business after about 3 years. which was an incredible learning opportunity, and kind of set me on the path for online businesses that I'm on today.
And that's, you know, your current focus is you've got a portfolio of brands, you've got agencies, you've really started to scale, not just an agency type of service, but scale brands, scale a portfolio of agencies. And we're going to talk about some of those things specifically. Would love to get your, you know, kind of instant gut react feedback on what are those common mistakes, whether it's a D2C e-com agency or just any of the agencies that you're working with or that you're considering acquiring. What are like the three biggest mistakes that they make that prevent them from scaling and becoming an attractive acquisition target?
Yeah, great. So what are the common mistakes that agency owners or agencies themselves make? And there's like 1,000 of them, but I'll maybe start with kind of like the top three then. Yeah. So the first one, and this is very fundamental. That's a fundamental problem that not only agencies have, but other brands as well. And that's that the agency owners have never even really talked to their customers to understand what their customers value. Like, they've never had that conversation. They've never asked, you know, what are the things that we need to do? What would have to be true today for you to give me a referral, right? They don't really understand true value from the customer's perspective. They just understand value from what they think is important. And I think, especially in the internet space, it's very easy to do that because you don't have to talk to people if you don't want. You can sit behind your keyboard and you can just build a business. But in reality, unless you're talking to your customers consistently and understanding them and providing them better value than the next guy that they're talking to, you're going to lose business very quickly and you're going to be churning business consistently. So number one is like fundamentally not understanding customer value. The second one I would say is, especially in smaller agencies, that the agency owners are what we call the brilliant bottleneck. They're always stuck in fulfillment. They might have like an amazing team. They might not trust that team. And then they become the bottleneck for all the decisions and all the improvements that have to happen to scale the agency forward. So they end up wearing all the hats, right?
Becoming dependency, really. Like they
exactly.
What was the term you used? Something a bottleneck?
A bottleneck. The brilliant bottleneck.
The brilliant bottleneck. I love that. The brilliant bottleneck where they're so involved in working in the business and they know where all of the deep tribal knowledge is buried and how it should look and feel that they themselves become the thing preventing the agency from actually scaling. That's really interesting.
I got that from my mentor Peter Lang, so I did not create that. But really this is, it's like pure ego when you look at it, because you have to be able to teach and you have to be able to trust your team. And it's incredibly difficult for most agency owners and most founders generally to have that trust and to know how to teach their team and what to teach them and how to get stuff off their plate without like abdicating responsibility.
That's huge. Teach and trust that, right? If you can't ignore it and you can't automate it, you got to learn how to delegate it. And that's a really, really important skill set to have, especially in that agency where, I mean, ultimately you're trying to get out of the business. You don't want to be the business. You want to create a team around you that does the thing and delivers on the promise and embodies the core values of the agency. And am I right? Is that that's really what you want, is to get out of the business.
It's 100% what you want,
right?
But it's incredibly difficult. And you're right. It's to a degree because you always, as an agency owner, have to be coaching, and mentoring your people.
Yeah.
Because your people are your greatest asset. And a lot of people say that, but like, they don't really mean it. It's like, you actually think your people are your greatest asset because how you act will be much different if you believe that they are.
Wow.
And how much time and money that you put into them will be much different depending upon if you truly believe that or not too. You know, agencies are incredibly difficult to scale because you have to scale humans. You have to scale people as opposed to like a e-commerce brand or a direct consumer brand. All you have to do is buy more widgets. It's a very easy problem to solve. Mm-hmm. It's actually very complex if you're looking at like logistics and cash flow, but compared to scaling people, much more difficult to scale people, in my opinion, than it is to scale COGS.
Okay, so let's double click into that. It is a lot harder to scale people than it is to scale processes and workflows. So why are agencies so interesting to you as a business?
Yeah, great question. So agencies are interesting because on average, agencies will do 20 to 30% net if you're a great agency.
Okay.
That is cash in the bank every single month, pretty consistent, some high months, some low months, but very consistent. If you take a look at that from an asset perspective, that's an amazing asset. Now, the exit multiples aren't very high because there's a lot of founder risk in most agencies until you get to multiple millions of dollars a year in EBITDA. But if you compare that to, example, like an e-commerce brand, we've invested in a handful of e-commerce brands over the past couple of years, and we're waiting 3, 5, 7, however long it takes to make a multiple of return on that asset. We're not really generating cash. You acquire an agency asset, you're generating cash on the way up. You can use that cash to invest in other assets, right? Or to fund your lifestyle, do whatever you want. So from my perspective, I think that agencies are kind of the undervalued assets that most people should look to purchase, but they're kind of blindsided by the shiny objects of like SaaS, like in, you know, 10 times revenue multiples, e-commerce, and, you know, scaling very quickly.
Sure. 60%, 80% margins. And I don't have to talk to anyone because they just, I just charge their credit card every month. And I've got this very hands-off business. RIP Charlie Munger, it sounds like you're building the Berkshire Hathaway of advertising, really.
Oh, he's way above me, but I appreciate the compliment.
The right track to be on.
Yeah. I mean, look, acquiring great assets at scale is, I think, the path forward for people that have skills in D2C, who have skills in agencies, not just taking those skills in a single asset, but expanding them to multiple assets that you can grow yourself.
Makes a ton of sense. I've never heard anyone talk about it that way, but explained simply, it does make a lot of sense. Probably some listeners now who are thinking about their agencies a little bit differently. Flipping this on its head a bit, you also come from the brand perspective. You're a brand founder. You have multiple brands in the portfolio as well. Give me some insight on that. How do you think of agency selection as a brand?
So, great question. Like, how do you select the best agency
for you
as a brand?
Yeah. Whether it's for your product or your vertical, or is that even a good way to pick an agency? Hey, they've worked with lots of brands like mine. They'd be good for me. Or maybe it's working with. How do you think through that? What's the right process?
I think that generally that's probably a good kind of mindset to be in. But I'll kind of walk you through like how I made the decision, because I have Family Gifts Co., which is my main e-commerce brand still, that I'm the majority shareholder of. And back in 2020, I had to choose an agency. And I ended up choosing one called AdKings, who are really, really great, really young, hungry guys who helped to scale the business. And then currently Weekend Digital, who I'm a partner in. And this is kind of the thought process that I went to. And maybe before I get into that though, I think that if you're doing, probably like $50,000 a month or less in revenue, I don't think you should hire an agency. Okay. I think you should spend some time. I think you should learn one platform, and that platform should be Facebook, and you need to be moderately good at it, because Facebook is 80% of most D2C brands' revenue. It's a core competency of D2C and e-commerce. And if you don't learn Facebook early on, you're always going to struggle to find someone to manage your ads. You're going to struggle to find the right partner, and you're not going to know what's wrong, because it's such a function, a core function of your brand. And the corollary to that is, like, I did Family Gifts Co.'s ads until we were at $500,000 a month in revenue.
Wow.
So I did
you personally.
Me personally. I ran all our ads.
Wow.
Hands on. And I'd never done ads before that. Right. So it's not incredibly difficult.
Figured it out. Right. So, and I think exactly that. So you, having no Facebook ad experience, scaled your own brand to $500,000 a month in revenue, learning, teaching yourself along the way. Not hiring an agency, none of that. You DIY'd yourself to $500,000 in revenue.
Yes. And there's an incredible amount of failure and all that, an incredible amount of learning, and you have to be okay with that. But like, again, I'd never done ads before, and we did pretty well. Now, after that, after you learn like Facebook and maybe a little bit Klaviyo or some sort of email, then I would try to look for the right partner who I think has consistently great content. And that content could be from paid ads. Maybe they have really great paid ads, or they have a great organic content, but they need to have some way to show you that they're the expert and that they work with your specific type of business, right? Like, if they work with 9-figure brands and you're a 7-figure brand, there's probably going to be a disconnect there, or vice versa, right? Or if they work with CPG brands, but you're not CPG, you're selling hot dogs, right? They're probably not going to be, well, that's CPG. They're probably not going to be a good fit if they don't work
it's
in your
it's
vertical
CPG
niche.
Till you cook it. So yeah, if, you're hot dog, if you're a hot dog vendor, you are now a service company.
Yeah. Cars, right? So something that's very expensive or different. So you need to find someone that is an expert or appears to be an expert. And then you need to make sure that they actually are an expert. Because what happens in most agencies is the founder is the person who's selling you. The founder is also sometimes the person who's doing the work, but not always. And you need to make sure they have a good team. And the way that I do that is through interviews. So I created like a top three list of agencies that I was very interested in working with. And then I interviewed one or two people on their client roster. I just asked them, hey, like, would you be opposed to letting me talk to some of the brands? And you'll learn so much from those customer interviews. And of course, look, they're going to give you their best clients for sure. And they're going to tell them what to say. Mm-hmm. So you have to be able, you have to know that, but you can also,
sample.
There's going to be some bias for sure, but you can see the level of client that they're working with. Like, is this client similar to me or not? You get to ask them specifically about the agency team that they're working at, not just the salesperson or the founder that's been selling you. And you get a much clearer picture of what you're being sold on and what you're actually going to get. Like, what are their typical deliverables on a weekly basis or monthly basis? Mm-hmm. How soon do they get back to you in Slack? Like, the important things that you want to understand as a founder, you probably are not going to get a real answer from the owner.
Such a great point. And it kind of ties back to the number one thing holding agency owners back from scaling, asking more questions. Right? It's the same thing that's holding. I think it's maybe something that we all just need to overcome is doing that. It's a little bit more of that old fashioned manual work. It's not sexy. There's not an app for it. There's not a SaaS tool that I can have do it for me. It's a little bit of good old fashioned roll up your sleeves and figure it out. Like, talk to humans.
Yeah. And again, incredibly difficult for most founders to do, especially behind a TV, their audio screen or behind Zoom. Yeah. But like, you have to be able to talk to customers in real life or on calls like this.
Yeah, that is interesting. And the last 3 years have definitely changed the way that we interact and has maybe desensitized us to the importance of exactly this, human-to-human communication.
Dude, what 100%. Like, I don't know the last time that I've gone out personally myself to get groceries. Like, it's been years.
Sure.
Right? Because COVID, I'm like, oh, someone's going to do that for me. So the amount of personal interaction that we're getting is like substantially decreasing. And more of it's becoming online. If people even want to have that online, and then they're just having less of it generally.
Wow. That's really great point. Like, not even just from our professional lives. Yeah. I couldn't tell you the last time I called to order a pizza. I don't know. Yeah. Like the day before I downloaded Slice, that was the last time I called to order a pizza. I don't even call to order a pizza. And I would just walk in and it's there and I take it and I leave. Right. So, yeah. You know, that's
and you don't
really
even talk
point.
Zero human interaction, right? You don't talk to them because they leave at your front door. It's like
none. Wow. It's a really, really great point. So getting back to basics, really, like talking to people. So the referral check, talking to the founders, what else? What other tips would you give brands when they're going through that vetting of an agency to make sure it's the right fit?
Yeah. So what are the red flags? Probably would be a good way to kind of start that. So number one, if you ask for a reference and they don't give you a reference, red flag.
Red flag.
Red flag number one. If this one's going to be probably controversial, but I think if they haven't owned brands before or they don't currently own brands, I also think that's a red flag. Now, there's an argument there of shiny object syndrome, which we could talk about for sure.
Sure.
But I think in order to really understand brands at scale, like scaling a seven-figure, multi-eight-figure brand, you have to be a brand owner. You have to really understand cash flow. You have to understand inventory. You have to understand contribution margins. And there's definitely some agencies out there that are understanding that better and bringing it to the market. But really, unless you've owned a brand yourself, you're going to solve problems differently, or you're not going to know the real problems that the brand has as an agency owner.
Right. So no references. They don't own brands themselves. Give us one more red flag that should leave us running for the hills.
Yeah. if you only talk to a salesperson through the sales process or only the founder through the sales process, you should be talking to a couple of people on that team. The founder is always going to be the best salesperson for the agency. And again, they're probably not going to be involved. In fact, you don't want them involved on your account because they need to be doing CEO things on a daily basis. But most agency founders will do sales and then you won't talk to anyone else. And you're probably going to be handed to a junior. So one of the things that I really like about Weekend is that we have Tom, who's our CEO, as our main salesperson. And we also have Grayson, who's our head of growth, who is a lot on the operations side and ultimately determines projections for all the brands we're working with and how to scale them. He's on the interview, the sales process as well. So he comes in, performs an audit, and then he's like the CMO for the brands once they're on, once they signed in, they're on the operations side.
And it sounds like too, not just looking at it from a, hey, let's do marketing because marketing's warm and fuzzy. No, like let's grow revenue strategically and tactically because I'm so intimately involved with your business, with your numbers, that the marketing is actually going to be a byproduct of the business.
Yeah, exactly. So I think a function that a lot of agencies miss is that they're really good at one service. So they're good at like paid media, and they're good at email maybe, and they're good at something else, but they don't really have the piece that connects all these things together, which in my mind is projections. It's, we're going to hit this revenue dollar amount. What do each of these service lines or each of these functions need to do from a revenue basis in order to hit our ultimate goal, right? There's no one who's kind of piecing all that together. And that's typically a CMO in most organizations. But that's like smaller organizations don't have that person. Mm-hmm. So the agency needs to have that person. So Grayson is that person for us. He mentors all the media buyers. They build out 6 to 12 month projections for all the brands we're working with. Wow. And then we know, hey, this is where we want to be in the next 6 to 12 months. Here's KPIs and targets for each of these different service lines, email, Facebook, Google, CRO, whatever that is that we need to hit in order to hit these. And the whole team is then aligned on our true north.
We heard a little bit about kind of that ascension of e-com marketing of you got to master Facebook first and then probably some sort of email component from there. Maybe walk us through, can you just take us further through that hierarchy? I'd love to get in this next kind of section here, your perspective on media mix. How do offline channels, how do you think that they harmonize with digital tactics? We'd love to just kind of get your sense on media in general. It's obviously a specific use case we're talking about here, but what do you think that ascension is? And then maybe we can evolve into like, what's your overall take on the right kind of mix?
All right. Considering who is on this podcast, this is going to be very controversial that I'm about to say.
Do it, send.
But I think for most D2C founders that have a fast growing business, I think retail is shiny object that I don't think you should be doing. I think it's a distraction.
What do you mean?
So I think getting really good at one thing, which is going to be paid ads through probably Facebook. It might be TikTok, but probably Facebook. Doing that thing really, really well and then mastering it and then moving on to something else is the way that you really succeed at anything really, but specifically at B2C. Yeah. And if you're doing Facebook, Google, email, retail, billboards, and you're doing $2 million a year, it makes no sense because you're a master of none, right? Mm. So I don't think until you're like $5-7 million a year in revenue, you even look at other things outside of Facebook and Google, because you just need to be focused on being really, really good at those things. That's not even including the whole attribution problem that we have, right? It's funny because we were talking earlier, it's like D2C brands, we complain about attribution. It's like, oh, the attribution's off. It's like we have maybe 4 or 5 channels we're looking at on a consistent basis. When you're talking, like you're talking bus signs, billboards, all these things that like maybe you have a phone number for attribution, like how you attribute that revenue. I don't know. That's incredibly difficult. So doing Facebook or one sort of paid media platform really, really well, until you're like multiple 7 figures, I think is, a smart move.
I think that makes a ton of sense. Hearing that feedback, I think from yourself, someone who's been in the pit, in the trenches, doing this, acquiring these types of companies, focus, focus, focus. Stop.
Yeah.
The shiny object syndrome is a real thing, and it's fun. It's that balance of curiosity and understanding where the puck's going, and what kind of be looking for next down the field, but also staying present right here, right now, because we can't worry about the future unless we master now.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I think shiny object syndrome is the number one killer of great entrepreneurs.
Wow.
Because it pushes your focus to multiple places and you can't focus on the one thing that really matters, which is like scaling the asset that you're working on and then ultimately exiting it, right? Because it's an asset and that's the whole goal at the end of the day.
We just got through Black Friday. Cyber Monday is like wrapping up or closing the books on that. What did you see this year that was maybe different than years past? Like, what are the initial kind of key takeaways from Black Friday, Cyber Monday, as we close out that weekend?
Yeah. So our biggest takeaway is this year we did a very good job of preparing in advance for it. There is an obscene amount more of like creative that you need, of email that you need, of everything that you need when Black Friday, Cyber Monday hits, and even Christmas season hits for sure, brands right. that yeah, do a lot of Christmas yet. Revenue.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this year we started to plan in like June for all these things.
Wow.
Last year it was a October plan and that was a very bad decision. And everything was last minute and there was a lot of rework and it was, chaos essentially. So this year we did a lot better of a job planning, and that was a people problem. We just had the wrong person in the planning seat back then. And now we got the right person in the planning seat. But I think that was the biggest takeaway is like with good plans. Yes, you might need to iterate later, but like having everything level and the company prior to Black Friday, Cyber Monday, instead of this giant run up that happens traditionally with e-commerce brands or agencies, that was our biggest learning. It's not even like a huge learning, but it's the most important one.
It's, you know, it is the same. Generally, it's the same Friday and the same Monday. It's going to be in that same calendar week every year. We know it's going to be there. Getting started earlier definitely sounds promising. How about from like a, just from a pure CAC standpoint, what are you seeing in terms of CPM trends? Is the performance there? Is the market there? I've seen kind of a mixed bag of if this was a good or a bad year. It seems like it was, so there were winners and there were losers and there was a whole bunch of carnage in the middle.
Yeah. So, man, I haven't really been in an ad account in like years. It sounds so bad to say. So I just see the reports.
You see the bottom line, the most important thing.
I do. Obviously, costs are going up everywhere. Costs are going up in fulfillment. Costs are going up on ad platforms. They're going up everywhere. So we've done our best really from a creative perspective to try to get as many creative out as we can during the year so that we know exactly what we're going to be like. What are our big winners from a creative perspective? What are our big winners from an offer perspective? And, you know, CPMs go up as you get closer to Black Friday, Cyber Monday, and then they go down as you get closer to Christmas, except for brands like mine, which is all literally like 80% of our revenue is done in something like 25 days between Black Friday, Cyber Monday and Christmas.
Wow.
Yeah. That's a fun business.
That seems like a stressful business. Like
it is,
we got to make it's, you can't even play small ball. Like, no, we're swinging for home runs and they're grand slams. And we need to at least drive in like two runs per swing. That's big leagues.
They're all big swings. But I mean, that's honestly where most brands should start is like very, very big swings and swings of offer, swings of pricing, swings of creative testing, like all these landing pages, pre-sale pages, all these things that are like the bigger levers. Those are the things that you should be testing on a more consistent basis than like the color of your add to cart button, which is, you know, where most people kind of start.
So give us an example of that. Maybe one that you've deployed yourself or one that you think a brand would be well served to try. Give us an example of like, what does a big swing look like instead of, changing my add to cart color to blue?
So, we have a brand that, my business partner, Tom, owns called IAB, stands for I'm Becoming. It's like a women's activewear brand.
Okay.
And last year, the brand had historically done around 8 figures between Amazon and between D2C. And Tom started the agency, typical shiny object syndrome. Didn't care so much about the brand. He's selling like women's activewear, basically like booty shorts. So not that exciting for, you know, guy, to be honest. And he saw more opportunity elsewhere. So the brand was doing something like $3 million a year, dropped, you know, $7 million because he wasn't focusing on it.
Wow.
But what we did is we changed the offer, to just BOGO. Some like very simple offer, buy one, get one free. And we did something like we moved from $300,000 a month to something like $600,000 or $700,000 a month just by like that one simple change of switching offer. And it's that impactful, right?
Wow.
Can completely change the trajectory of everything. Now, that's a pretty big offer. So you have to make sure that the margins work. You have to understand shipping and how that's going to be impacted. And you have to make sure that you're counting all those discounts into your the ad target, the ROAS target that you have. Right? So there's a lot of technical things you need to do to make sure that that works, or else it will blow up in your face and you'll
go really, money, really bad.
Right. But like something as simple as that can literally change the trajectory of an entire company.
Changing the offer, changing the way that we price and package. It's not the what, it's the who, right? Getting back to like simple ideas of we don't need to throw the baby out with the bathwater or chase the new shiny thing. Like, no, what we got is good and it's working. We could just make it work better.
Exactly. Yeah. Alex Ramosi, everybody knows the guy, like incredibly talented.
$100 million offer, free plus.
Yeah. But he's got the thing where it's like you can do more of the stuff you're doing, or you can do kind of like new stuff. And most people tend to gravitate to new stuff. When in reality, if you just do more of what you're currently doing, then you're going to have a better result. Because you're just pouring gas on the fire versus like trying to go start kindling. Start a new fire. Whatever that is, right?
It can be kind of big growth gets boring, right? Like, once you figure out the thing, you got product market fit and you got all the economics figured out, like, you don't need to change it. Let's just go faster. Let's get bigger. We don't need to go reinvent anything. It's all working.
Do more of the stuff that works, right?
Do more of the stuff that
and
works.
Not the shiny objects.
No more shiny. Focus. Talk to humans. No shiny objects. Kyle, for the agencies that are maybe listening, that maybe they would be an appealing acquisition target for you, for an agency owner that's listening and thinking about exiting, what are the things, as you're thinking about acquiring, what are the things that you're looking for in a perfect acquisition target?
Yeah, great question. So we're looking for really amazing agencies that are in the $1 to $5 million a year revenue range, that are located in the US, that have a great culture and team, that we can just apply what we learned at Weekend, what we learned through scaling our own brands and agencies, and apply that to their agency. So anything, and that's a pretty, you know, detailed ICP for the acquisition space, but like D2C, USA, $1 to $5 million a year revenue, great people. And you know, we are open to minority as well as majority acquisitions. We prefer majority, 60 to 80% acquisitions, so that you can stay on and take a second bite at the apple, so to speak. But we're open to all those conversations.
You know, and that's, I think, is interesting too. Maybe you've reached a point where you are fatigued or bored with the business. This can feel like starting over again without the shiny object syndrome, while still being able to focus on your core competency, the thing that you've spent so much time building. I would imagine that it could feel like new blood. I'm born again. What are the experiences generally of an agent? I don't know. I've never sold an agency. Like, what is the experience generally of an agency owner after they exit? Like, is it depressed and they, you know, wander off to the woods and we don't see them? Or like, what is generally the experience of a founder that exits?
So that's a really good question. I think agency owner, like everyone experiences like this different emotions coming in together. It's at like such an incredible pace differently. Some people might act one way or the other. The reality of the situation for most agency owners is, though, when you exit that business, you have golden handcuffs because the acquirer is still going to require you to be around because you don't have systems and processes, because you're not tracking the right metrics, because you don't have a defined ICP, because you're doing the sales, because you're doing fulfillment, because you're doing all these things, right? So it's very difficult for most agency owners, unless you're like an eight-figure agency owner who doesn't have a personal brand, which is like a unicorn, to actually truly exit the business, because you are the business in most cases. Right. An e-commerce brand, like exit out, whatever, no big deal. But like typically the founder of the agency is like the driving force behind the decisions, even if they're not actively involved in fulfillment. So I'd say, a tempered, expectation of that exit. And, but there's going to have to eventually be someone who replaces that person who is just as good or better than that person. So maybe start looking for that person now, if you're thinking about exiting, so you can offer them as a solution.
Love that, right? Find your fire yourself. Work on those processes. Stop working in the business. Start working on the business so that you can enjoy all of that hard work when eventually the time is appropriate for you to step away from the business. That is
exactly
advice.
Yeah. I was talking to an Amazon agency right before this, and they'd already exited a couple of businesses, really intelligent owners doing a couple $100,000 per month. And the owner's like, I'm there. He's like, I'm like basically the investor in this. I go to meetings once a week and I look at numbers, and that's my involvement in the agency. I'm like, awesome. That's a really sellable agency.
Sounds great.
He's like, right. You brought in a CEO that does everything. And this isn't typically what happens. Typically agencies crash and burn when this happens, but they've been able to do it really well. Like that's an agency that's exitable where that guy, like he could exit tomorrow and you know, he can go because he's already got the team in place, but most agencies aren't really structured that way.
Start thinking about those things today. We're going to avoid shiny object syndrome, but we're going to think about the future and skating to the puck. We're going to stop working in the business and start working on the business. We're going to focus, and we're going to talk to human beings.
That's all you need to know, man.
And give referrals. Give those references. Otherwise,
you're
sketchy. You're absolutely a sketchball if you won't tell me who else you work with and why, when and where I can call them. Kyle, this has been incredible. I think that we've got a lot here for folks to go on as we head into 2024. Where are you most active? We used Latin long in the real world to let people know where we are. What are your Latin long? Where are you most active? Give folks the socials and every place to find
you. Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Hunt Kyle. And you can also just find me on LinkedIn at Kyle Hunt as well, Kyle A. Hunt. Either one of those, I am pretty active on both of them. And I just started a YouTube channel. I don't want to brag, but I have 30 subscribers.
Let's go. You're on your way to the plaque. Listen, so I've got a YouTube channel about a podcast about billboards, and somehow I got to 500 subs. My son thinks I'm a YouTuber basically at this point. He's like, my dad's got
that's
a
awesome
deal. He's got a 500,000 subscribers. So you'll get there. You're going to be there. Blow right by me. Kyle, this has been incredible. We'll link to all of the social handles so that folks can continue to follow you and your work, get in touch if they're so inclined. I can't thank you enough for being here.
Thank you, man. And I have an offer as well. If you're an agency owner and you're in the $1 to $5 million year range and you're looking to exit, DM me on LinkedIn or Instagram or YouTube, and I'll do a free 21-point audit of your business to tell you what you should fix before you're looking to exit.
I mean, how good is that? That's why you stay to the end, kids. If you found this to be helpful, please share it with someone who could benefit. As always, make sure to smash that subscribe button, and wherever you're listening to the podcast reviews, that's how you help us grow. See y'all next time.
Quarter century, I finally came to my senses. I finally got my hand up on the tinted Benz, kid. I see the world clear through my tinted lenses. With the dream and the drive, the possibilities endless. Now print that, send this all the way to Tokyo. Take a trip down south, down to Mexico. Next stop, Shanghai, the world-class trade show. First class all the way, cause that's how we roll. Yeah, call us the rockstar businessman. Rockin' shows, we handle business, man. We got our own future in the palm of our hands, cause divided we fall and together we stand.